Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan on a Victory Friday, football Friday. Washington dominated Dallas. They didn't beat the Cowboys. That's not accurate. It was a close game for much of the day, and then the fourth quarter, things got out of hand. Cowboys had to throw in the towel. They got embarrassed and shamed and humiliated, and Washington emerged with a 40-burger. We're brought to you today by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. It is time for your Beltway Blitz on the big win, so let's get it started right now. J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington, hops on. J.P., why don't we just start with that fourth quarter? Defensively, they buckled down. Offensively, Antonio Gibson runs all over the Cowboys. That got fun, huh?
That was a fun one, Grant. And I asked Ron Rivera that today, considering the year he's had. I mean, the guy had cancer. He's had to deal with a name change. I mean, just COVID. It's been a difficult year for everybody. And Rivera said, you know what, that one, it was a lot of fun. And he said on the plane, on the flight back to D.C. last night, he went in the back with the players, and they were rocking and rolling and watching the game back on their iPads and enjoying themselves. And after those really tough losses to the Giants and Lions, I think they deserved a blowout win. They played really well and really hard, and the Dallas coaching staff made some really stupid decisions, and it was a fun game.
Johan Pietro Finley, about the stupid decisions. Listen, some people are going to quibble about that fourth and one in their own territory. I'll quibble about throwing up a hitch to CeeDee Lamb when you've got a billion-dollar running back and you know, before their offensive line was destroyed at that point, but whatever. But to me, that fake punt with the sequence of Terry McLaurin chasing down Jalen Smith, stopping them, and then they end up settling for a field goal with a goal-to-go situation, and then that fake punt, that was the game right there. Dallas took it out of their players' hands, and I just can't believe I saw that. I don't have any other comment other than that, but that really changed everything for me.
The fake punt was laughable. I think Washington fans should hope Mike McCarthy and Bones Fossil are coaching in Dallas for the next decade. That was a disaster. It's one thing, fourth and 10 is when you call a fake punt. I mean, generally you're looking at like a fourth and 6 kind of thing. Maybe they wanted to be unpredictable, fine. But it was a long developing play where the guy that finally got the football that was supposed to go upfield was 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So you're expecting him to go 25 yards to pick up the first down? It was stupid. I had an NFL special teams coach text me last night. That's the kind of stuff that gets guys fired.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. I don't really know what they were thinking or why they did that. I mean, Fossil's got a long track record of having a lot of success to fall back on, so he won't get fired, I wouldn't think. But that was really, really embarrassing.
Yeah.
How about the offensive weaponry? Beginning of the year, people were saying this is the worst skill group in the league. I mean, Terry McLaurin, I don't think he's a top five receiver in football. That's too bullish. But he's played like one. His production says he's one this year. Antonio Gibson can play. We know that. I mean, he is running away with kind of being the best rookie running back in football this year. J.D. McKissick's perfect in the role. Logan Thomas has emerged now as kind of a gadget player for them, and he's going to be a tight end too maybe moving forward. I mean, so much for them having the dead last skill group in the league, huh?
Totally. And I heard the Rivera soundbite you guys played. I mean this in the best possible way. I don't even think Antonio Gibson is playing that well yet. I think he has – like, I don't even think he's in fourth year yet. I think he's kind of redlining in third year and still has fourth and fifth to get to. I think he can be way better. And that's coming off 115-yard, 3-touchdown performance. He can be really, really good. His skill set, his athleticism is just off the charts. McLaurin is a star. McLaurin's the best receiver this team has had since Art Monk. I think we can say that, right? I mean, I know that Michael Westbrook had a couple decent years. Rock Gardner had a 1,000-yard season. But McLaurin is a star. And think of it, just at a really simple level, when's the last time Washington's offense had two must-start fantasy players? Because with Gibson and McLaurin, they do. And I don't know the last time that happened.
Defensively, JP, been really impressed these last couple weeks. Listen, when the offensive line gets beat up, you lose two stars like Dallas did in this ballgame, you can make excuses, but this is what should happen. Daron Payne should dominate. You should see Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Jonathan Allen, Kerrigan, Tim Settle gets in the act. You should see this group do what they did again in the second half, winning games for them. I think that's really encouraging and really exciting. That's a bunch of young players I mentioned, non-Kerrigan division.
Totally. And it's okay. Listen, offensive lines get beat up. Any Washington football fan knows that. For years and years, the Washington football offensive line was always banged up. And they've dealt with injuries this year. Sheriff went on the IR earlier in the year. So D-lines are supposed to dominate and be physical and attack when they have opportunities. And Washington's doing it. And, I mean, especially in their NFC East games, the D-line's been really good. I think the one performance in the division – The first half against the Giants at home was pretty much a disaster. But outside of that, they've been really good in the division. That's something Ron Rivera talked about. Go back to March, and he talked about we've got to be way better in our division games. And by and large, they've done it. They swept the Cowboys. When's the last time they did that?
Well, yeah, 2012. It does not happen. JP, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Be well, my friend. I missed him there, but I think he said goodbye. Just – believe that he said goodbye.
In my heart, I do.
He said goodbye. In my heart, I know that he said goodbye to us. Let's keep the train on the tracks. Talk to our buddy Chris Russell. Talk some football. Slasherini defensively yesterday. 3 points after halftime. One conversion on third down after halftime. Jack Del Rio did it again, huh?
Yep, absolutely. I'll say goodbye for J.P. Finley. Bye, Grant. Bye,
Thank
Danny.
Yeah,
Jack Del Rio, you know, look, they've been a second-half team all year long. I mean, I guess they make great halftime adjustments, really, is what it comes down to. I mean, you know, Jay Gruden and his entire coaching staff for 6 years had no idea how to make second-half adjustments, and Jack does. And he laughed, by the way, when I asked him about this a couple of weeks ago, so that's why I'm trying to make a joke out of it. I mean, obviously, they make adjustments all along. One play that stands out to me, guys, is the Settle sack. If you look at the all-22 end zone view of that, that cluster, the way they designed that pressure, they had three guys jammed to the left side, the right side of the Cowboy offense, and two guys, including Settle, kind of spread a little bit on the right side, almost a modified bear front, and they just tore it up on a key third down stop. When you thought maybe the game was maybe starting to get a little bit away from them, that's a play that will stick out in my mind. And, you know, here's the other thing. After McLaurin saves the touchdown, that series and Jeremy Reeves and Cameron Curl and Jimmy Moreland were all involved in that. And I want to say Cole Holcomb on one of those three plays. I can't remember. That's normally, you know, 7 points easily. Even against this defense this year, how many times did we talk about that? And yet they buckled down inside the 5-yard line and forced a field goal in a very, very key spot.
Russell Wilhouse, question for you right here. Against Dallas in their two games, as they swept Dallas, they ran for 390 yards combined in those two games.
Yeah.
You can't pick any three games combined where they get even close to that total for the rest of the season. The effectiveness of the run game is clear. It's obvious. I know Dallas isn't any good, but they've also played a lot of other defenses that aren't particularly good and haven't been able to run it as effectively. What did they do against Dallas that they can run the ball like that may be applicable to, I don't know, another football game?
It's a great question because I don't know what the hell is going on with their defensive line. I mean, we all know Aldon Smith is a freaky athlete, but not the biggest dude in the world. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence is pretty good at stopping the run. I know they cut Dontari Poe earlier this year. They signed, who was it? The pass rusher and McCoy, and he got hurt early in the year. But this is a group coached by Jim Tomsula, and we saw When Jim Tomsula was here, right, they would usually start out good against the run and then wilter down the stretch, or wither away, I should say, down the stretch as the season and as the snap count and as injuries kind of piled up. Well, this Cowboy defense hadn't been very good from the start, especially stopping the run, but I was really surprised because they were much, much better overall in their last four games, including the first Washington game. They were only allowing like 125 yards a game or so, roughly, on the ground, and 25 points a game. They were much better, and yet Washington just kept hammering at them. Guys were getting blown off the line of scrimmage. I mean, on a couple of those Peyton Barber runs, and I know you guys don't really like Peyton Barber, but on a couple of those runs, like, nobody touched him until he was 8 yards down the field. You know, and then you have the speed to turn the corner like Antonio Gibson. And here's the other thing that I think Washington does more than probably most is all the shifting and all the – it's not just running, you know, traditional shifts. It's lining guys up in the slot and moving them to the backfield on the same snap. It's all the eye candy stuff that we've all talked about that I thought was going to be a big part of this offense. All of that creates hesitation, doubt in someone's mind, and maybe that's just enough against a team like Dallas to confuse them.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
See you, dude.
Barber was really good yesterday, and I'm not necessarily anti him. I think he's been really good in the role they carve out for him. Short yardage guy. That's about what he should be at this point in the league. Shouldn't be a featured guy. G&D on 106.7 The Fan. There is still a lot to get into when it comes to this football game. Next, let's talk Chase Young. The numbers for him yesterday were great in terms of pressures, pressure percentage, how often he got off at the line of scrimmage and got upfield, some of his career highs. So we'll get into some of the particulars from Next Gen Stats on Chase Young next on Grant and Danny. Digging into the numbers on Next Gen Stats, some analytics on yesterday's win over Dallas. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Washington 41-16, pounding the Cowboys. Antonio Gibson ran for a 115, three touchdowns. Terry McLaurin had seven grabs for 92 yards. Logan Thomas threw a 28-yard pass, caught a touchdown, had a carry for a first down in the game as well. Scott Turner take a bow, running the annexation of Puerto Rico from Little Giants. I mean, the whole thing was awesome. Everything about yesterday's football game was a blast.
That's got to be the best moment for you, by the way. Just the fact that they referenced this movie that you love, that I don't remember anything about. I may have seen it, may not have. You're obsessed with it, and they actually did the thing, and Ron Rivera was like, yeah, it's from the Little Giants. Like, I can't imagine that. Like, if Davey Martinez was like, and I told the guys, and hey, we're going to run the play for Major League. We're going to do the, you know, the steal of home with Willie Mays Hayes and a bunt with Jake Taylor for a base hit, you know, with Kurt Suzuki. I would lose it. Like, I would lose my mind if that's how they won a meaningful game. You got to be on cloud nine, dude.
Oh, I was loving it. It was so good. Because here's the thing was, when they ran it, I'm going, that's the annexation of Puerto Rico. Like, that's the play. That now, it's a little bit of a wrinkle. It's a little bit different. But the shtick is that everybody's kind of standing there and nobody does anything. And then you hand the ball off under the legs. I mean, I didn't think that they would actually claim that they got it from the Little Giants. I thought, well, it's been done in college a couple times, I'm sure, and maybe, you know, before it was in the movie, it was done in some play. Like, Andy Reid always does this. He's got these wacky goal line plays that they'll run, and everyone will give him credit and heap praise on him, you know, during the broadcast, and they'll say, I've never seen anything like that. And then after the game, he's like, yeah, we saw it on film from, like, the 1927 Air Force game against Notre Dame or something. Like, that's literally where they find some of these wacky plays. So I thought it would be something like that. But no, Ron Rivera came out and was like, yeah, that's from the Little Giants. Like, a bunch of our guys saw it with their kids a bunch of times. I couldn't believe it. It was so happy. The only thing better than that is if the Washington Capitals, like, scored a goal on the Flying V or something from the Mighty Ducks. And after the game, you come out and like, Alex Ovechkin's like, yeah, we watched the Mighty Ducks as a team last night, and we decided we were going to do the Flying V. And Todd Reirden, you know, told us that we needed to do it. You know, Peter Lavely said, let's do that tomorrow in the game. Like, that's what it was. This is just molding my childhood with the team, the thing I care the most about. It was great. It was my perfect day, Danny. It really was.
It had to be so awesome for you. Like, If somehow the Nationals, again, I keep going back to the Nationals in a baseball example, but if the Nationals started like a 10-year-old on the mound who had like a freak arm accident and he could throw 100,
right.
Like if that kid pitches in a game against the Braves for like for the division championship or something, in game number 162, I think your head would explode. And I think anything short of that, yesterday was as good as it gets.
So here's some next-gen stats numbers for you, digging a little bit deeper into the game. I mean, you know, a lot of people could just sit here and say that Chase Young is a beast and this guy's a tarantula and this guy is, war daddy or whatever. But we try to give you some perspective and some insight that maybe you're not going to get everywhere else. So digging a little deeper in on at next-gen stats here. Chase Young tied his career marks yesterday or surpassed them in a few critical rush metrics. He had 5 pressures, which ties the most that he's had at any point. His pressure rate, so how often he got to the quarterback based on pass rushes, was 16.1% yesterday, which is the highest pressure percentage that he has had at any point this season and in his career. Big deal. In terms of getting off at the snap, 0.74 seconds for him was the quickest on average. Yesterday he got off at the snap all season long. The result was obviously the cleanest, most impressive one-on-one win for a sack of his season. He had the TFL on Ezekiel Elliott and a couple big plays in the running game as well. But it's now back-to-back games, and it's really one calendar week, Danny, going back to last Sunday. But Chase Young, the huge play on the goal line against Joe Burrow, the big plays that he made yesterday, high-impact production. We've known he's playing well. We've talked about that. You know, a lot of shows that do simple-type analysis are going to be looking at his stat count, and that's it. You know, we kind of do better than that, more than that on this show. We've said, look, the guy can play. It's obvious. But we wanted some more production. We wanted to see some of the metrics, the numbers. And they are starting to come in way of pressures, the pressure percentage, getting off the ball faster yesterday. He looks more comfortable, and it's starting to bear some fruit, I think, for this defense in Del Rio.
I think so, too. And it's the kind of thing where one of two things should be happening. And going back to conventional here for a minute, so bear with me. One of two things should be happening. Either so much attention is paid to him that everyone else dominates and feasts, right? Montez Sweat gets nothing but one-on-ones. And, you know, Tim Settle, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, Kerrigan when he's in the game should be dominating at times. And the other thing that should be happening is if he is left one-on-one, which he is plenty, by the way, he should be doing some of these things in terms of, again, the pressures, the quarterback hits, the knockdowns, the influencing. You've seen some of those. They've happened sporadically. I mean, think of the Kendall Fuller interception against the Giants. Chase Young beats his guy, ends up in the backfield, forces a quicker pass than Daniel Jones wants. Pass gets picked off. That's what happens. The design of the pass rush, the ball that Troy Apke batted down that hit him right directly in the hands last week. I think it was Allen beats his guy in the face of the quarterback, etc. It's not always sacks, right? Sacks, to me, are a cumulative thing. They can be a little bit fluky. To me, it's about that pass rushing process that you're talking about. Are you beating your guy? Are you influencing the plays? Are you dictating what the offense can do against you? We're starting to see that a little bit more consistently. Listen, it happens twice. Yeah, it happens twice within 5 days against a couple bad offenses. You're seeing it.
Yeah, and not only seeing it, and it's more obvious, but it's more importantly, like, it's changing games, right? That Bengals play was a savior of sorts. You know, the big play he made against Elliott was a momentum shifter on a drive. The sack was a huge deal to set up third and a mile before you got them off the field. The other side of the ball, if you want to put a spotlight on another rookie, and Antonio Gibson, who rushed for a .115 in the 3 touchdowns. First player as a rookie to score 3 times on Thanksgiving Day since Randy Moss, believe it or not. So looking inside some of the numbers via next-gen stats, pretty interesting. Almost all of his best work yesterday came between the tackles, you know, within the tackle box. He ran out wide yesterday a total of 5 times. All 5 of those carries, other than the touchdown where he won the foot race to the pylon on the far side of the field, it was like a 5-yard carry. All 5 of those carries were 5 or fewer. One of them was a loss of 1, like a stretch to the left. 2 of them were for 2 and 4 yards, and the other was for 3 yards. But between the tackles was where he did his heavy lifting. He had 3 carries of 10-plus, all of them within the tackles, you know, most of them out of that same kind of look out of the gun that they like to run out of. But Gibson was at his best, according to Next Gen Stats, on the interior stuff. 9 carries they had him for inside the tackles, 91 yards, an average of 10.1 per, including, you know, 2 touchdowns on inside runs yesterday in the ball game. The other thing that was interesting was his 37-yard touchdown, So that was the game icer, the one that put it away, where he, you know, runs right into the W in Cowboys, straight down the middle of the field. Terrible missed tackle.
Yes.
About, I'd say, maybe 7 yards downfield, something like that. That run, I guess it was six, because it was an expected run of 6 yards. The chance of scoring, based on, you know, this is the next gen way they look at this. They say, okay, this is where all the defenders were. This is where he was. This is the angle everyone was taking. And then they do the math. What is the chance he scores on this play? 0.5% chance. But he made 37 miss. You know, coming up, took a decent angle, honestly. Should have been a tackle. Made the tackler miss. And he ends up scoring a touchdown. Expected 6 yards, got 37. Two rushing touchdowns with touchdown probabilities of at or below 1% yesterday for Antonio Gibson. Pretty impressive.
So between the tackles totals, I think are very interesting, because I've generally said that doesn't excite me all that much, honestly. Having a running back that has this receiver skill set, that has some of the speed that he has, using him as a battering ram isn't that much fun. But one of those touchdowns, for example, it was technically inside the tackle box, right, where I think it was a draw call, and the defensive end gets up the field. Gibson goes inside that and then bounces it quickly outside and goes untouched to the end zone, right? That longer run, I want to say that was the 30-some yarder for a TD. So it was a quote-unquote outside run, but it was in between the tackles, right? Getting him in space is what I want. I want him in space. I want McKissick in space. That's the kind of thing I get excited about. You could do this against Dallas, right, where basically Peyton Barber, anybody running the football is not going to be touched for 6 yards. You're going to have a pretty good day running the football. But Gibson is showing some things, man. I haven't seen kind of that, I don't know how to say this better, but like kind of that stop and shake and wiggle and start and stop that you see some from like kind of the Barry Sanders school of running back. What I've seen, quite frankly, is a guy that puts his foot in the ground and gets downhill, and it's pretty powerful. Decisive. I've been impressed by that, man. You wouldn't think a college receiver is a guy that's going to run with that kind of physicality.
And I love him between the tackles. You know, that's one area where we'll disagree a little bit. To me, what I care about when I talk about running the football is less the running downhill kind of between the edges of your offensive front, and more what is the look that you're getting. How many guys are in the box? Are you spreading people out? You know, what's your spacing? What's your formation? Like that kind of controllable stuff. And I think they put him some really good situations. We talked about it earlier. He's the third lowest percent of runs against eight-man fronts in the league. One other thing that I saw via next-gen stats that I want to just throw out there. So Jalen Smith's interception, and we've talked about this a lot today. I think it was the play of the game, the Terry McLaurin chase down tackle. So McLaurin's running a crosser, starts off in the right slot. The interception, obviously, left side of the field was intended for McLaurin. So at the pick, he's just a handful of yards behind Jalen Smith, who can run. It's kind of his calling card at linebacker, right? Jalen Smith topped out at 19.7 miles per hour on that 43-yard interception return where he got caught inside the five. Terry McLaurin tops out at 20.99, so basically 21 miles per hour. But the reason I bring this up is, according to the win probability from NGS, the Cowboys' win probability right before that snap was 22%. Okay, it was a killer of a pick. Their win probability doubled after the interception to 44% after the return inside the five. Almost a toss-up game at that point. Now, had they have scored, I'd be fascinated to know what it is. I would guess it would have been at least 50% that they win
touchdown
that game.
Touchdown to tie it right there, you mean.
Right. Had they have scored that on that play. Terry McLaurin chase down keeps it at a 44% likeliness that Dallas wins when they're trailing because they had to settle. I should say it was 44% at the moment of the tackle. After they don't get in, Washington holds, they kick the field goal. It's now down to a 29% chance that Dallas wins that game. So to clean it up, I don't know if I'm making sense. Basically, before the snap with the pick, Dallas's chance to win the game is 22%. After the pick and the return, 44%, and I think it would have been up over 50 if they get in. Then you hold, and it's back down to 29%. And that's why my point all day today, Danny, has been that McLaurin chase down was the story of the game.
Such a massive play. Because, again, it gives rise to the sequence. You get that stop. The next time Dallas has the football, you get that fake punt, that disaster of a fake punt. That sequence right there wins the game for Washington. It was a one-possession game that rapidly turned into a three-touchdown-plus advantage for Washington.
Cole Holcomb, Jeremy Reeves came up huge in that stand, too, for Washington on those ensuing three plays. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Let's take a peek at the Alex Smith performance. Haven't really gotten into him. And some of the trickeration the last couple weeks from Scott Turner, this offense. They found some new pages in the playbook that we didn't know existed. You're listening to The Fan. Football Friday. It feels like a Monday as we're breaking down a Washington game, but it is a Victory Friday after a Thanksgiving Day shellacking of the Dallas Cowboys. Let's get into Alex Smith for a second. So overall, 149 yards, a touchdown, an interception. He yesterday had the lowest quarterback rating of any of the four quarterbacks who played. He, Dalton, Stafford, Deshaun Watson. The quarterback rating is whatever it is, right? But you delve into some of the numbers. His completion percentage, 73%, was the highest. His expected completion percentage, about 64%, was not the highest. So give him credit for this. He completed 9% of passes more than kind of was anticipated yesterday, which was the best among four quarterbacks. But if you look at completed air yards on average, so how far from the line of scrimmage you are throwing the football on an average, 3.7 yards on his completions. Intended air yards, these are also incompletions, chucking the ball downfield, throwing it away, whatever. 4.1 yards from the line of scrimmage, his intended air yardage yesterday on average. That was 7 yards behind Deshaun Watson or more. 6 yards behind everybody. I mean, he was behind Stafford. He was behind Dalton. So yesterday was kind of more of what we're anticipating from Alex Smith. The pick was bad. I'd love to see him get back to, you know, not turning the ball over at all. I know he was hit when he threw it, but I thought that was a bad play for him as much as it was a bad play for everyone. If not for the chase down tackle from McLaurin, that would have been a game-changing pick six and a real debacle for Washington. It wasn't, luckily. The defense made it work. Overall, though, the way I view yesterday, and I don't know if you view this any differently, that's a game they win with Kyle Allen. It's a game they might win with Dwayne Haskins. I'm not sure, but I think it very possibly could have won that with Dwayne Haskins. I mean, Alex Smith averaged less than like 5.5 yards per attempt yesterday. So there just wasn't a lot asked out of the quarterback. He threw for 140-some yards. That's not a game that is about the QB at all. And people will say, well, they win or they're different with him, these anecdotal things. I mean, good luck with that, because it's hard to make a case yesterday that he was a plus. I'm not sure that he was a minus. I'm certainly not going to say that he was. I just think he was neither a plus or a minus. But he was not a plus yesterday. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
So if Matt Prater doesn't make a basically 60-yard field goal as time expires, they go to overtime, and let's say, as would be reasonable, they beat Detroit. Neither team was stopping each other much that day. Alex Smith, you'd go, damn, that dude played well.
Yeah,
390 yards,
game.
Brought him back, right? You'd go, that's pretty impressive. Conversely, against Cincinnati, when their offense manages nothing in the second half, really nothing from the towards the end of the second quarter on, there's nothing that impressive about what Smith did. And for somebody that, quote, doesn't turn the ball over, he sure has turned it over a lot, I would say. Those five interceptions to go along with three touchdowns hasn't really been that awesome this year. So the middling production masquerading as somehow successful football is the type of thing that's just bothers people that care about stats and information so much. And I happen to be one of those people, and I think
you are
too.
I won't even say stats, though, because that word, honestly, Danny, ends up allowing people to go, you just care about stats. That's not what's important. Like, information is a good word you use, production. But, like, the last two games, period, that's a 28th best quarterback in the NFL kind of game. You know what I'm like? That game, you can have 30 guys in the league have that game. Now, it's two wins. So let's build a statue, I guess. And I hate having this analysis because it is such an amazing story still, and we should always say, God,
that's
I'm rooting for this guy, and I love watching him, and I can't believe he's playing again, and it's incredible. But our job is also to talk about the future and what else is out there. And anybody who sees them win these last two games against Cincinnati and Dallas, where they've given up three total points on defense in the second half, and is thinking something other than they need to find a franchise quarterback, I can't fathom being in that boat.
So watch, they've played four bad teams consecutively. They've lost two of those games and won their most recent two, and that's awesome. If you can, just as you said, watch a guy throw the ball inside 10 yards of the line of scrimmage almost exclusively with the occasional downfield shot that has happened. I mean, Terry McLaurin against Cincinnati, and I think his long this week was 20 yards. I think it was a catch and run. Logan Thomas had the long pass of the day, by the way, at 28 yards. If you can do that and say, we're solved, we're good, which a lot of people are doing, based on the record, I guess, of him as a starter. I can't play that game. I am, and again, it sounds like I'm knocking the guy. I'm not. What he's done is amazing. I want my son to grow up to be just like him, by the way. Both of my sons, for that matter. But this isn't good enough. The way that they're being quarterbacked isn't good enough. And I think that's where I am on this. And the reason I'm going so hard with that is, again, the Ian Rappaport report, there's this kind of this buzz, this momentum. Like, it went from, well, he's obviously a salary cap casualty. Next year they can finally get out of his deal. That, you know, I don't necessarily fault anybody for signing because it made sense. No one knows he's going to break his leg in the most catastrophic injury of the last however many years. But this is something they should absolutely be using that money for a left tackle and a left guard. They should be using that money for another receiver and a tight end. They should be using that money to upgrade this roster. You've got the knows the offense caretaker backup guy in Kyle Allen to be a mentor. Paying a glorified coach $20-plus million to hold a clipboard is not something I'm excited about. And now there's all this momentum for him starting games and being the seat warmer and everything else, and I'm just not on board with it.
So I will have a disagreement with, but not be angry, if he is back next year as the guy who is mentoring the quarterback. There was a great video that came out. I actually tweeted it. It'll be hard to find at Grant H. Paulson now because of all the tweets during the game yesterday. But of Ryan Fitzpatrick talking with Tua the day he got benched last Sunday. Did you see this?
I did.
And so Fitz is on the sideline, and he's kind of taking Tua through the game. He's like, hey, here's where today's great for you. He's like, you know, you learned today. And his basic point was, you know, you took too many sacks, dude. You can't hold on to the ball. You're not always going to see it clean. There's going to be days where our offensive line just doesn't have it, and the defensive front is wearing them down and chewing them apart, and you've got to help them. But he's like coaching him through this bad game, Fitzpatrick, who got benched for him, right? That's invaluable. It means something when the guy doing that is Alex Smith probably more than it does Kyle Allen or something like that. Now, for me, I just care a little bit less about some of that stuff. Doesn't mean it's completely irrelevant. And I think Kyle Allen knows the offense really well. I think he could be a help to whoever you draft, pick your rookie quarterback in the first round. And so I would do it that way. It would be a lot cheaper. I would spend that money that you're spending on Alex Smith on an area of the football field where I'm helping myself immediately. A safety, a corner, inside linebacker, a second wide receiver, a tight end, whatever it is. It's just not going to be at quarterback for four starts, let's say, and then being a backup potentially. Anything more than four or five starts, I will have an issue with. Like if you have Alex Smith next year and Zach Wilson from BYU, and by week 11, Alex Smith is still starting for a 5-6 team, that will be ultra annoying and unacceptable, and I'll have a big problem with that. It's not really necessary in today's NFL, and it isn't generally how things operate, as you're seeing with Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow and others, year in and year out. But having said all that, Danny, I guess my take is the same as it's always been. I would not bring Alex Smith back. I would absolutely move on from him in his age 37 year next year. I would take the dead cap hit going into 2021 of $8.6 million, which I think is what it is, depending on the June 1st designation. That's what I would do. Because otherwise, his cap number is about $23.3 million next year. So that's my philosophy. If they keep him, it won't be the end of the world to me. It's not like I'm going to lose sleep or be furious. I think he can be an asset to them. I just think it's unnecessary. But I believe, and I'm confident in this, and this is where we differ a little bit, it seems to me like you are growing in your concern that the football people are going to just decide that Alex Smith is their 2021 quarterback. And, like, they may draft a guy in the third or fourth round, but, like, it's Smith and Kyle Allen next year, and Smith's the starter and Allen's the backup. And I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt to say, I think too highly of their evaluational skills. I think that they know that I know that they know that I know that they know that I know that that can't happen, and that would be unacceptable.
I don't think that highly of those skills based on what we've seen this year, but B, the fact that the GM is also the president, that's also the coach, he's also a client and all that other kind of stuff. I can't have a $23-plus million position coach on my roster. I know he's a great dude and everyone loves him, and if he wants to coach, he can coach. Let's get that salary off the books.
Yeah, totally agree. And it's two straight games. Wins, by the way, where the wins are pretty clearly not based on quarterback performance. His best performances have come actually in losses, but they've given me more hope probably than anything that he can do this. But you're hearing it from fans where they go, I don't know the exact record because I don't really do this, but I see people tweeting this. I thought it was 8-5 when I saw this yesterday. But like, as a starter, Alex Smith is 8-5. You know, Washington's best record with any quarterback since they last won a Super Bowl. Cool. Yesterday, they didn't win because of Alex Smith. They didn't beat the Bengals because of Alex Smith. Like, we can go back and find the other six wins and see if they won or lost those games because of him. Maybe they did, but I remember a couple of years ago, and that wasn't normally the case when they were winning. 800-636-1067 is the number. We'd love to hear from people on this. Let's open up the AAA Always On Call listener line. The caveat to the conversation, and I think the precursor to the dialogue, is very obviously what Alex Smith is doing is amazing, and we're happy for him and proud of him, and it's just an incredible, inspiring story. But we got a football convo to have here, too. We got to put our big boy pants on and think about 2021. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. I want to talk Scott Turner at the top of the hour. It's going to turn maybe into a Scott Turner appreciation segment after yesterday's performance. But I don't think he gets enough credit for some of the design stuff that Washington's doing, particularly in the running game. They rank number 3 in the National Football League since week 7 in expected points added per play in the running game, which is just a way of talking about efficiency and effectiveness on the ground when you run the football. Their offensive line's playing a lot better. They've gotten better as the year's gone along in pass protection, in the run game, I would say. That's a credit to a lot of things, good coaching probably, but also, you know, guys like Morgan Moses and Brandon Scherff. Moses now kicked over to the left side has been awesome. But I want to talk about some of the designs in the running game where they move. Sometimes they have a lot of jet action for eye candy. They move McKissick around and loop him behind Antonio Gibson and send Gibson in the other direction with the football. I mean, they make it a little bit harder on defenses than just your traditional handoff shoving match. And it's what I love, and it's what people should want to see more of in terms of creativity. And Scott Turner is doing a lot of it, and it's a reason to feel like maybe he gets it. So we'll talk about that. Let's talk QBs, though, right now. Your thoughts on Alex Smith, where you stand on the quarterback situation going into 2021. Succinctly, I'll just say, Danny, and you can give your thought after this, I'm very happy with what Smith is giving them. He's clearly their best option among their healthy quarterbacks right now. It goes without saying. I pull for him every time he drops back because it's an awesome story. They need to draft a quarterback in the first round who's their franchise quarterback if they're drafting in the top 5 or 6. If they're drafting at 18 or 19, I would consider either trading for or signing a veteran quarterback or drafting a guy at 19. And maybe that player doesn't start in September. Maybe they start in October, November. Doesn't matter to me. I would go with Allen until then. You can go with Smith for a lot more money if you want to. But I am having a new franchise quarterback, quarterback of the future, on my team as my QB1 come next year, regardless of what happens the rest of the way.
Yeah, you know how I feel about this. If you're not in one of the two acceptable phases, which is developing your franchise guy or playing your franchise guy, you're just spinning your wheels. And that's what they're doing this year. And Alex Smith playing, it's a cool story. To me, it's nothing more than that. I need that franchise quarterback. They haven't had one since Joe Theismann got hurt. And I need that guy that's here for 10 years. When you think of this team, I want you to think of that quarterback first. The same way you know who Atlanta's quarterback is. You know who Green Bay's quarterback is, Pittsburgh, etc. I need that position solved for the first time since I was a small child who didn't understand the way the world works. I need that done. This isn't it. My second theory on this, or philosophy on this, is that salary cap money could be used to better this football team. It could have been used this offseason, by the way, to make a better landing spot for a young quarterback that at the time may have looked like he had a chance to do so, but I digress. I can't have a $23 million glorified position coach on the roster. I know he's a great dude. I know he's a mentor. That's awesome. I've got Kyle Allen for that purpose, and I'll be straight with him. I'll say, you might start a few games. This is about this kid that we hopefully are going to be able to
draft. You wouldn't even have to say that to him. You're Kyle Allen.
He would get
right?
it. But yeah, but I'd have that convo.
You are the placeholder. You're Tyrod Taylor. Kevin in Arlington, what's up? How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, bud.
So I have a slightly different take. I understand the angst about what we're paying Alex Smith for basically, a mediocre starter. I get it. And I would have no problem if he came back and they were able to bring him back at a reduced salary. I don't think this ownership will do that, but I would explore it. But a couple things. We don't know how long it's going to take Kyle Allen to get back. I don't think Kyle Allen is the equivalent of Alex Smith in terms of quarterbacking or in terms of mentoring. But what we absolutely cannot do is think that Dwayne Haskins is the future quarterback, which, you know, because he picks Alex up off of a play yesterday, you know, there's so many Kool-Aid drinking Washington football fans saying, you know, oh, he's getting it. He's going to be the guy. And, man, I hope I'm wrong about him. I've been against that pick since the beginning because I didn't see the accuracy that is needed to be a successful NFL quarterback. And then I came to find out that he had maturity issues as well. So we have got to, as Grant said, we have got to use our first-round pick either by trading down, trading up, however we have to do it, to get what we think is our franchise quarterback. Or we do have to go and get another veteran because we've got to be on schedule with the rest of this team coming forward. I don't think we're ready to win big in 2021, but you're starting to see what we have. And by 2022, assuming reasonable drafts and free agency, we should be right there to contend for the NFC if we have the quarterback.
And right, which is why, Alex, Kevin.
Well, thank you, buddy.
You're 100% right, and it's why you shouldn't, and I think you're this is your point, you can't waste next year not having that guy. Like, drafting a guy after next year is a mistake because you're now presumably knocking on the door. Theoretically, your defense, the rest of your offense, is ready to win. So if you let Wilson pick whatever guy, I'm not saying I like all these guys, but Trask or Lance or whoever, if you draft one of those guys this offseason and they take their lumps in an 8-8 or hopefully 9-7 year next year, then ideally the season after that you're ready to go win your 10 games and make the playoffs with that quarterback who's now made, say, 9 or 10 or 11 starts going into their second season. Completely agree with you across the board. I'll disagree a little bit on Allen versus Smith. I think Kyle Allen, Alex Smith has not protected the football. The problem with Kyle Allen is he's going to turn the ball over. Alex Smith has also turned the ball over. I think Kyle Allen would take more chances and make more plays, to be honest with you. It's the old, like, Colt McCoy, Alex Smith thing in a way. But bottom line is it doesn't matter. I'm not wasting any time talking about Haskins in the future because that's not a thing. He's not going to be their quarterback of the future.
Yeah,
he shouldn't be their quarterback of the future. That ship has sailed. It's over. If somehow that ship gets back into harbor this offseason, I'll scream about it then. I'm not going to waste any time doing that now. Now the debate, I guess, is Alex Smith versus a rookie. How does Kyle Allen fit in? No, that's kind of the combo for right now. What do you guys make of the QB situation? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.